You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Zuby is back on the podcast. I would say Zuby is the master of hypocrisy. He identifies it. He calls it out. He writes about it. He is not afraid to say what he thinks. He's also a musician slash rapper slash fitness expert slash writer. He wrote a book on fitness called Strong Advice. I love some of his recent tweets, like, the harder you work, the better your genetics get and the more lucky you become. I'd rather be called an influential person than an influencer. We just talk about the state of the world and update. And here's Zuby. Zuby, what's going on? I see you all over the place. You were on Joe Rogan, tiny little podcast, and now, of course, you're on a mega enormous podcast, mine. I always think of you as the king of anti-hypocrisy. Like, anytime I feel there's something hypocritical going on in the world, I'll go onto your Twitter account and see what you're saying. And usually you're saying something incredibly insightful in a much better way than I would have said it. So wanted to just have you back on the podcast and chat about things.
No doubt. Well, happy to be here, James. It's always a pleasure.
Just out of curiosity, I saw you commented briefly about monkeypox, which of course is, it was literally as if they were running out of news. Like Amber Heard was the only thing in the news. I did a comparison between Google searches on Ukraine and Google searches on Amber Heard, and Amber Heard was dwarfing Ukraine. So it just shows you how ridiculous things are. But now, of course, they needed something quote unquote real. So monkeypox, which is happening in your neck of the woods, I guess. There's more cases than here.
Isn't it like 90 cases worldwide or something?
Yeah, well, that isn't that a pandemic now?
I'm not deeply concerned, to be honest with you. And I think it would be quite hard to get me deeply concerned. But, in terms of the grander scheme, the truth is that the media tells people what they should care about and who they should fear, what they should fear. And that's kind of how it goes. It makes sense in a way, but it never ceases to amaze me just how quickly you can divert people's attention towards whatever you want them to pay attention to. I mean, I guess one could argue that is literally the purpose of media, to direct and redirect people's attention. And it's not something that is inherently bad or sinister, but it's pretty crazy how the narrative just shifts. It's like, okay, focus on this thing. And then 2 weeks later, nope, okay, pay attention to this thing. Nope, now we're changing again. Here, pay attention and look at this thing and care about this thing. And it's quite tiring at this stage, because I think for the past 7 to 8 years especially, it's been really nonstop. It's been really nonstop, I think, both in the UK and in the USA, especially with the fear narratives. It's like, they want hundreds of millions or billions of people just to be living in constant fear all of the time. And I don't think that's healthy. It's good to know and have some idea about what's going on in your world and what's happening in the country and what's happening outside of it in general. But it also drives people insane if you're constantly being beaten over the head with negativity and with fear and stuff that stokes division and hostility.
Yeah, and you say it's good to be informed, but I sort of feel like the media doesn't really inform because, I mean, look, I've been in the media and I've been outside the media being written about, and I've also just been, like everyone else, a casual observer of, or not so casual observer of the media. And I find that it rarely actually informs. Like, if you really want to be informed, you kind of have to go to the source. So if you really want to find out about monkeypox, which I haven't yet, and I don't doubt I will, but I would read medical papers and actually, you know, you don't have to be a doctor to read. So I would read medical papers and try to form my own opinion. Like, what do you think it's actually necessary ever to pay attention to the media?
I mean, necessary? I wouldn't go as far as necessary, unless your job somehow depends on it. I'd say with what I do, it's good for me to have like at least a high level overview of what is getting hype and what people are caring about. But I mean, you could never watch the news again in your life, and you could live perfectly well, probably live happier than people who consume a lot of it. So I don't think for the vast majority of people it's any type of necessity. But I guess as human beings, there's a natural level of curiosity and interest in the world around us. And again, you don't need to get that from the media. You can be very informed by, as you said, going directly to the source and looking at other things. But perhaps even to know what to look into, some of that might be informed by what other people are talking about and paying attention to.
Right. I agree with that. So I would say I took a media diet for about 10 years. And it was only in the beginning of COVID that I started reading the media in order to sort of interpret what was the media was saying to help people figure out what reality was, because there was a little too much fear and that concerned me. And but you said it just a second ago. People, you don't have to read the news or watch the news to know what people are talking about. People are talking about it, and that tells you what, you know, the media is probably saying. And I find that, okay, people are talking about there's a war going on, so let's read about the history of this, what's actually happening, blah, 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 you know, read sources who might be on the ground and so on, as opposed to reading, you know, the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever it is. And I find that my life was much happier on my 10-year. I thought my media diet was going to last forever. Unfortunately, COVID was so extreme and there were so many lies on every side. It's not like, oh, liberal this, right that. It was just all bullshit all around. So, and people were scared. So Robin and I would do these Instagram lives to kind of, you know, translate. But I'm thinking of going back to the media diet just because life gets depressing with too much news. But what's kind of, I mean, you've been through 20 different cycles of hypocrisy in the past year or so. I mean, and even before that, like starting, you know, I should mention you won the Women's World Deadlifting Championship or something like that. And we've talked about that before, but you, for the purposes of a tournament, you identified as a woman, kicked some ass, literally, and became a world champion. And you were there, obviously, you know, it's a serious issue and you were making a point. But you really have crusaded against the hypocrisy you see. And do you think there are results from that? Do you think it's worthwhile to point out what's hypocrisy, or do people just get angry at you?
Yeah, I'll be honest, man. I think I've red-pilled at least hundreds of thousands of people in various ways, shapes, and forms. I mean, millions upon millions of people around the world see my content now, which is pretty crazy. And you don't always know the impact that you're having on people, because that's not necessarily visible most of the time, right? I mean, you blog, you've written multiple books, you run a podcast, you do all kinds of things. And however big you think your reach is or your influence is, I can guarantee you it's considerably bigger than that, because a lot of people are quiet and you don't really know who's consuming. You put this podcast out there, you can see the numbers, but you don't know how it affected people. You don't know what lessons they learned from that or what tidbit they took from your book. The very first time we talked and we interacted, I mean, you didn't know that I'd read a couple of your books before, but I had. I knew who you were, right? Yeah. I've known who you were from probably 7 or 8 years ago. And it wasn't until perhaps 2 years ago that our paths crossed and it was like, oh, cool. Okay. And that's how it goes. It, the same thing happens when you do music. But now in this day and age with so many people on social media, it's the same thing. You put stuff out there, whether it's on YouTube or it's Twitter or it's Instagram or it's Facebook, and a lot of people see it. I mean, if I look at my impressions, I mean, on Twitter alone last year, my account did over 2 billion impressions.
You're like the best tweeter out there, I think. Like,
thank you. Thank you.
You have, again, such a great way of getting right to the heart of the matter. And that shows to your qualities as a writer and as a thinker. And part of my interest always is not just talking about, oh, what's hypocrisy and what's not. But I really like how you know, a lot of people think, oh, if you're the type of person, because I've gotten this accusation, oh, he's just trying to be controversial. He's taking something in something important and just taking a contrarian stand for his own personal gain, which is ridiculous because nobody gets paid on Twitter at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if I really want to do something for my personal gain, I would avoid all social media and focus on my personal gain. But what does drive you to act, and how do you, when do you act, and how do you think about these things? Because again, I think you're really good at summarizing things so concisely. I'd like to do that better, and I feel like I'm pretty good at it, but I'd like to do it even better.
Yeah, well, I think that's my superpower. I mean, I do a lot of different things now. Of course, it started out, I mean, I released my first album way back in 2006 and have put out, you know, another 7 since then. And as a rapper, and then on top of that now, of course, I run my own podcast and appear on a lot of other people's. I do public speaking. I'm an author, a writer, and all of these things are essentially working the same muscle for me. It is taking complex ideas, which are sometimes abstract, and expressing them in a succinct, clear, and clever, sometimes even humorous way. And that's something I'm really good at, and I've put thousands and thousands of hours into, and put out hundreds of thousands of, I mean, if you want to call it pieces of content, then, you know, probably millions at this point. I mean, every single conversation, every single podcast, every single tweet, every single post, and so in terms of what motivates me, it's the same reason why I wanted to go full-time with my music, because I believe my mission on this earth is to positively inspire, motivate, and impact millions of people without compromising my own integrity, authenticity, nor message. That's what my goal is. That's why I wanted to become an artist. And I thought I was going to do all that just through my music. And I still do it through my music. But over the years, I've added a few additional strings to the bow. But the motivation remains the same. It's all about being a positive inspiration and motivator to people. And I want to encourage people to think. I don't want to exactly tell people what they must think, but I want people to think. And for various reasons, I think right now in the current sort of socio and cultural climate, you're not really supposed to think, right? People get mad at you if you think. You're just supposed to go along with the narrative and repeat the phrase and do what you're told to do. You're not meant to question anything, challenge anything. And that's not the way things should be. In fact, that's a very dangerous premise when you're talking about hundreds of millions or billions of people, if people are just blindly going along with every single narrative and they're not questioning things and they're not challenging things and they're saying things that don't make sense and they're behaving in ways that don't make sense, then that's actually really dangerous. You can take a cursory look back at history and see times when people got caught up in these type of mass psychosis events, or when people were unwilling to ask questions or challenge things that didn't make sense and which were either completely nonsensical or outright immoral or unethical. And it leads to very, very dark roads. And I'm very aware of that. I also think there's just so much negativity out there, man. In the world of music and entertainment, especially in hip hop, there's always been, you know, my entire life, there's a lot of negativity out there. As we were discussing with the news, I mean, you turn on the news and within 10 minutes, you're feeling, you know, in a lower mood, you're starting to feel, you know, angry and upset and fearful and sad. And I don't know, I think there's so much negativity out there. And I think we need a big dose of optimism and hope and positivity. And that can all be done in a way that's also very real and authentic, right? I'm not someone who shies away from the ills of the world or the sins of humanity or anything like that. In fact, I'm very, something I think about a lot, and it's, some part of my content. It's balancing it out. And you can recognize that life is difficult and there's hardship and there's all types of struggle. Every single person goes through all different types of struggle, whether you can see it or not. And life is harsh and the world is violent and people die every year. 60 million people die every single year. Everybody gets sick. People get old. There's tragedies. There's wars. There's diseases. There's all sorts of bad, sad, and negative stuff that's out there. It does exist and it always has, and it likely always will. But there's also so much positivity, and you need to have hope, because if you don't have hope, then both on an individual level and on a societal level, then you end up on a very dark path. And so I like to, I guess, inject that hope and optimism and positivity and try to shift people's mindsets in a better direction. That's why I'm also so big on, personal responsibility and self-accountability and self-improvement, self-empowerment, all of that stuff, because the truth is no one's going to do it for you. No one can do it for you. The politicians and government aren't going to do it for you. Random people on the street aren't going to fix your life for you. Ultimately, it comes down to you, and that might scare some people and be uncomfortable to hear, but also it should make people feel empowered. It should make people feel empowered that if you're not happy with where things are and where your life is, the best thing about it is you can do something about that.
But let's take as an example. So there is a lot of negativity in the world, like you say, everybody's going through something. Everyone has challenges. What keeps you? What's the last time you've had a challenge that really struck you, where you were like, "Oh, that hit me. I have to kind of work through this."
It's a good question, man. On a minor level, it happens. It sort of happens all the time.
Sure.
In terms of major stuff, over the past 2 years, especially in the UK, for example, there was this third really, really long lockdown, which went all the way from like late December 2020 all the way up until around April or May 2021. And it was dark and it was cold and it was isolating and there was like other stuff going on. And it was just like a sad, dark time.
Yeah.
It was hard to stay upbeat and optimistic and hopeful in that time period. That sucked, to be honest. That was not a fun period and certainly not something I'd want to live through again. But all throughout my career, there have been all sorts of ups and downs. I thank God I'm very lucky and I'm grateful that I haven't had like, it's almost a weird question for me because I don't really like to dwell on my low times and stuff like that, because ultimately I'm so grateful and I know how fortunate I am that there's so many people in the world who are and have gone through so much more crap and hardship than I have. So whilst, yes, we all have our challenges and struggles, I don't really like to dwell on it. I like to dwell more on my blessings and the things that I'm grateful for and project that out to the world. Because, yeah, there's the grind, there's the hustle. If you're an entrepreneur, we all know as an entrepreneur, there's all types of very high highs and very low lows, and maybe make a lot of money and lose a lot of money, and people don't believe in what you're doing, and you face, get rejected thousands and thousands and thousands of times, but then you also have the wins and all of that. But to me, that's all a choice. And that's also part of the process, right? If you want to be successful, then you kind of just have to go through that grind and you have to survive that grind. And it never totally stops. It's always there in some way, shape, or form. But to me, that's just kind of, that's just how it is. That's not something for me to get caught up in too much.
I mean, from a societal point of view, then, what gives you optimism? Because again, a lot of the stuff you focus on is the stuff that, oh yeah, he's right. I'm getting angry about this now.
I love people, man. I love humanity. I often say that people are the best and worst thing on earth. which I think we really are. I mean, the human species and the human condition is such an infinitely fascinating topic to me. And actually a lot of my content is kind of based around that, really. It's just, you know, talking about the world and society and people and myself and everybody else, and just trying to make sense of it. You know, I'm really someone who's trying to make sense of the world and trying to seek the truth and speak the truth. I know a lot of things, but there's far more that I don't know than what I know. And I'm just trying to get to the truth. I'm just trying to understand the world better. I'm trying to understand myself, other people, countries, individuals, entities, everything. I think that's just an infinite pool of interest. But I think I'm driven by the fact that I have a real genuine love for humanity, for people. As dark as things can be, and as much as human behavior disturbs me on a daily basis, and how much stuff there is to be sad about, it's also, man, like, there's so much good. There's so much good, and people have so much potential as well. And that's something I really, really recognize. It's something I recognize in myself. And from a young age, I've always been working to try to fulfill my own potential. It's part of why I'm so into going to the gym and constantly being creative and making new things and putting them out there and working on my skills and trying to learn new languages and trying to do this and that, like mentally, physically, spiritually, knowledge. I'm trying to get better every single day. And I think that I want to encourage people to do the same. I want to be an example of that. But I also want people to recognize the potential that they have. Because number one, if you focus on your potential and you focus on living it out, then it gives you the power to help way more people, right? The more you fulfill your own potential in these different areas, the more people that you are able to help. And as a result, you become more successful, you help more people, that ripples outwards. And also, if you are focused on that, then you're not focused on if you're trying to build your own empire and you're trying to build up yourself, then you're not trying to tear down other people's empires. You're not trying to tear down other people. Like I imagine you don't spend huge amounts of time during your week or over the years going on various platforms and writing hateful and hurtful and insulting comments at random people. It's like,
only with my troll account.
You know, like your focus isn't there. And I think, especially as a man, I mean, I often say that men are always either creating or destroying. And I think that's true. You know, we're builders and we're destroyers by nature. And if you are not building and you're not being constructive, then whether or not you know it, you're probably being destructive. You're probably destroying your own body, or you're destroying your own mind, or you're destroying other people's bodies and minds, or you're pulling down society and so on. And I'd like to have less of that, and I'd like to have more people constructively building. So number one, I can directly help more people, and as a byproduct of that, become more successful. And then, yeah, I can encourage people to do the same thing. And I think that there are a few things that you can do that are more noble than that. So that's really where my focus is.
Building yourself is what you're saying. Because then building yourself,
you encourage other people to build themselves, and we all build each other up. You know, a lot of people have this idea about the world that we live in this zero-sum game, and that one person's success or happiness somehow is taking away from other people's. A lot of people have that mindset, and I think it's a very toxic mindset. People who see something good happen to someone else, or someone achieves something, or they have something they want to celebrate, and their first instinct is to insult them or try to tear them down or to try to diminish what they've created. And I think that's very sad. I mean, I love seeing people win. I love celebrating other people's success, and it inspires me, right? It's like, cool, if someone can do that, it shows it can be done, right? If they can do it, why can't I do it? I've never seen someone achieve some cool, interesting success, and I'm there wanting to rip the person down. I mean, that's so crazy to me. It's something I see every single day. That's one thing that's fascinating about social media, is you get to see the full spectrum of the type of mindsets that are out there. And it never ceases to amaze me how some people just wallow in this negativity and always, always, every day, they're just there trying to rip down other people, hating on people, trying to diminish other people's, what they're doing, you know, and people like that, they're not, that's the thing, right? They're not building anything. And because they're not building anything, because they're not on their game and working on self-improving, they're trying to tear down the people who are. And that sucks. I also think it's a very immature mindset to have. And it just doesn't reflect reality. And if someone goes through their entire life like that, then they're going to be both miserable and unsuccessful. And I think actually the world would be a much better place if we can encourage more people to be happy and successful. It's all synergistic to me. I think that, you know, someone else, another man succeeding isn't taking anything. They're not taking anything from me. In fact, if anything, it's the opposite, right? They're putting that out into the ether. And that is a model, an example, and that ripples outwards. And other people can then also become successful off of that.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. immediately after you post your job. ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I sort of feel like the last great time on social media was roughly like 2012 to 2015. Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of like, and I'm not blaming any political party or person, but it was sort of like before the 2016 elections, but after the financial crisis and the world had sort of basically come back from that, things weren't as heated. Maybe we were like tired as a society. And so I felt that was a good time where more people were focusing on how to better themselves as opposed to just hanging on to the last headline. And, you know, people were more focused a little inward and they weren't as much, there were still accusations on social media. Social media is what it is, but it was a little more relaxing. You could say something without being crucified for it.
Yes.
Although I personally started getting crucified around 2012 or 2013. it would be more like once a year rather than like 12 times a year.
Not a monthly occurrence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we're living in an age of overcorrection. And I think we're overcorrecting on a lot of different things, right? I think these days, almost everything seems to be an overreaction or an overcorrection, right? So very minor transgressions are viewed as, you know, these terrible, catastrophic, world-ending events. You know, someone says something that's slightly out of line and all of a sudden they're the worst person in the world and we must, you know, destroy them and stop them from ever earning a living and there's no way for them out of it. And everything just gets so exaggerated, right? I mean, yes, there's been a virus going around for the last couple of years, but can people, especially now at this point, you know, can we really say that the response was, you know, I thought it was disproportionate from early, but it was clearly disproportionate, right? And it's this all or nothing mentality where it's like, okay, either you're denying that something exists or you're saying that it's absolutely nothing, or it's an existential crisis and the world is going to end and everything. It happens with everything. It's happening right now with, it's been happening for a while now, you know, the whole, I barely ever talk about this issue, but like the whole climate change thing, right? So either you must believe.
You better not say something I disagree with
either,
right now.
Either you must believe that this is like the greatest existential threat to humanity ever. And we have like, what, 10 years to reverse it. And if we don't, then we're all going to be underwater and everything's going to melt. And, you know, it's everything's going to die, right? If that's not your view, then people will say that, oh, you're a climate change denier and you hate science and you probably also believe the world is flat and that all these other things and you're a conspiracy theorist. And it's like, dude, is there no middle ground between anything, right? The same thing happens with politics now. And it's like, you have to be totally like, everything's totally, you know, it's far left or it's far right, right? It's like, aren't most people just kind of like pretty normal and hovering somewhere around the middle? Like, I'm pretty sure in real life that's how it is, but it's these false dichotomies all the time. And I think sometimes, especially in online discourse, number one, it's not very well suited for it. But I think also there's a lot of lazy thinking and it's a lot easier to just throw things into binaries and eliminate all nuance and rely totally on the straw man arguments of anyone who you think is your opposition and so on. And it's not helpful. And I think that's one of the things that's leading to the increasing polarization and division and the sort of hostility and animosity that people feel towards each other, because it's being painted by this picture. And various media channels also push this narrative that it's just good guys and bad guys. And it's just, there's just two views out there. And if you don't believe in X view, then you must believe in Y view. And, you know, Y view makes you a terrible human being. X view makes you a good human being. And it's that simple, right? If your friend believes in Y, then he should no longer be your friend, right? If your family member believes in X, then they're a terrible person and you probably shouldn't even associate with them and so on. And they did this with Trump. They did this with Brexit. They did this with BLM. They did this with COVID. They're doing it now, right? It's just like we've had all of these narratives. It's like every single year you get a new narrative, and each time it just stokes more hostility, more division, and more right. paranoia amongst people. And I don't think it's healthy nor sustainable.
And you're not allowed to opt out of the discussion either. Because like, if you say, for instance, I'm just not going to have an opinion, then that means you're against everybody.
If you're not willing to say it, it means that you have the opposite. You have the terrible opinion, whatever the terrible opinion is.
So, for instance, during each election, I always write that I'm not going to vote. And this year in particular, everybody was upset at me. Like, I was accused of everything possibly imaginable from both sides. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I would try to explain, like, look, I have, one vote is one vote, but I have a podcast that has many listeners and I write to many people. I mean, it used to be the case that journalists, for instance, and I'm not a journalist, I'm a little different from that, and so are you, but journalists, for instance, would be reluctant to vote because they wanted to be neutral. Their ideal would be mm-hmm. to be neutral so they could report on things. And so I would explain to people that if I voted, that probably would in some way bias me towards one side or the other, and yes. I want to be as unbiased as possible so I could have both camps or three camps or 20 camps on my podcast without worrying about anybody thinking about my bias. Mm-hmm. But that was not an acceptable response. I mean, literally, because I wasn't one vote out of 100 million, I was called racist or transphobic or whatever it is that people were voting on. So it's an interesting thing that we're seeing more tribalism, in-group, out-group, than ever before.
Well, let's not say more than ever before, because I'm sure we can all think of far, far, far worse examples over the past century or so of that.
I would agree, but not on so many topics, I feel. So it might be the case that, okay, in the United States, right before the Civil War, senators were beating each other up on Capitol Hill. But it was over one issue. It wasn't like, oh, you're this, and this, so now I have to beat you up. Like, now it's like there's many issues happening at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, there are. Social media certainly doesn't help with it. It certainly fuels the fire. I don't think it's the primary cause. I think the primary cause is actually a lot deeper. I think it's more spiritual than anything else. But it amplifies it. And news, let me not even call it news, information travels so quickly, and ideas, both good and bad, can be spread and shared to millions of people within minutes now. And as amazing and potentially helpful as that is, it can also be massively destructive, especially when, see, one thing about social media as well is people forget that you are interacting with human beings. And I think this is a massive problem on Twitter especially, which is that you when you're talking to someone in real life, there are so many cues from body language to vocal inflections to just being able to look at someone in the eye and have them there and have that natural human empathy and connection that keeps conversations within a certain realm. But when it's like you're just hitting on a keyboard or tapping on your phone and you have no idea who's on the other end of it, and you know, maybe it's not even a real person, maybe it's a bot, it's this and that, and you've got this audience, and as you said, you've already kind of got these ingrained teams, then it just leads to this very chaotic and dishonest and not particularly helpful conversation. And you know, I think what's sad is that people who should know better are, you know, some of the worst at this, really. Like, it's one thing for teenagers to behaving like this on the internet, but when it is leaders of countries or cities or states, or it's so-called reputable mainstream media outlets, and they are very obviously fanning the flames and, you know, using these straw man arguments and posting these ridiculous headlines, you know, these attention grabbing headlines, which are literally designed to trigger people and cause outrage and get them to share it. And maybe they didn't even read the article, right? They just saw the headline and then they share it and they comment on it. And next thing you know, you've got millions of people commenting and sharing. Maybe like 10% of them actually bothered to even read past the headline.
I feel like you're describing the story of my entire literary career.
Yeah, and it's not, I get why it happens from a kind of emotional and psychological perspective, but my concern is just that it's not, I just don't think it is sustainable. And something that certainly gives me hope is that, you know, when you look up and you actually interact with people in the real world, I mean, most people are still sane. If you spend, you know, 8 hours a day on Twitter, you can start to think that, oh my gosh, like everyone has lost their mind and everyone is crazy. And like so many people believe in this crazy idea or whatever. But then, I don't know, you just go out in the real world, go take a walk around the city or where you live or go to the beach or whatever. And you talk to people. It's like, actually, most people are pretty sane and normal. And most people, wherever you are in the world, something important you learn from traveling, most people want a pretty similar thing. Most people want to be healthy. They want to be safe. They want to have a family. They want their family to be safe and healthy. They want to take care of their kids. They want to have a decent degree of liberty and freedom. They don't want to be under the boot of the government or a gang or another individual or something. Most people have pretty similar, you know, we have fairly similar things that we're striving towards on the high level. But I think, again, there's been so much focus recently, not on the commonality, but on the things that we disagree on, right? The things that you can get everyone to fight about. So that's where all the focus is, because as similar as we are, human beings are also very different. We've got about 8 billion people on this planet. We all have different personality types. People have different belief systems. People have grown up in different places, different cultures, different languages, different societies. So there's so much true diversity that's out there as well. And I think sometimes it seems like the focus always is on the differences. And you've got people who even make a living, you know, by focusing on the differences and stoking the division. And this can happen along racial lines, gender lines, ethnic lines, nationality, how much money people are earning, what street people live on, like what party, or obviously politics, what party you vote for, whatever. And it's, I mean, I guess that's not something new. I mean, all throughout human history, there have always been these, you know, these points of division. There's always been tribalism. There's always been conflict. But, you know, if you live, say, in the UK or you live in the USA, you live in a modern Western country, let's say. We truly do live in the most prosperous, the least discriminatory, the least violent, lowest infant mortality, highest life expectancy, and so, you know, despite all the problems and struggles that still exist in the world, it's hard to point to another certainly century. Maybe you could point to another decade, right? Maybe you can be like, maybe the 2000s were better. But it's hard to certainly point to another century, right? Is there any time, like, let's say prior to like the 1950s, let's even say, where someone would have rather lived in that time? You know, would anyone rather go back to the 1500s or the 1600s or the 1200s?
No. And you know, just to that point, and sorry to interrupt, but there's no other, every century has been actually surprisingly less violent than the century prior. So as a percentage of the population, violent deaths per century has gone straight down since the beginning of recorded history. So even though last century there was nuclear bombs and two quote-unquote world wars, it was actually a less violent century than the century before. And that century was a less violent century than the century before that. And I'm assuming this century will be less violent than the last century.
Yeah, and even beyond violence, what about all the other things that can kill people, right? What about, I mean, what percentage of people used to die before the age of two?
Yeah.
Right? It was like a double-digit percentage. You know, babies were dying left, right, and center, and that was just kind of the norm. There are so many diseases now that have been completely eradicated, which used to take out millions and millions of people. You know, there are actually less wars now than there used to be. There's still a lot of war. There's still too much war that's going on. But, you know, in my lifetime, it's not like there's been some military draft or something where, okay, well, even, you know, 17, 18-year-olds and every guy in their 20s, you know, we're going to ship you off to another country and you've got to go fight to the death. I mean, that happened a lot in the past. So the reason why I'm bringing this all up is just to maintain this degree of perspective, because I think that's one thing that sort of is fueling a lot of the problems. I think when you don't focus on the things to be grateful for, then you only see the negative, right? You only see the problems. And while it's important to recognize problems and to try to fix issues that still exist, it's also perhaps even more important to kind of take stock of the progress that's been made. Even if you want to look at the last 100 years, right? From 1922 to 2022, right? Let's take the USA, right? Take one country. Look at the USA. Look at the USA's progress from 1922 to 2022. And it's been phenomenal. I mean, that's one person's lifetime, right? That's one long lifetime. And you see how much has changed and how much more, as you said, you know, like far less violence, much better health, you know, people's, in terms of the way people treat each other and, you know, discriminate, you know, overcoming discrimination and segregation and outright, you know, you want to talk about tribalism, like really, really nasty stuff. And so does that mean that everything right now is perfect? No, it's not perfect, right? We're never going to have a perfect world because human beings are not perfect. But that's something to be proud of, right? So why dwell every single day, all of the time? It's like, why always dwelling on the negativity, always dwelling on the problems? But it's like, hey, actually, can we take a minute and be grateful for the fact that so much progress has been made in such a relatively short amount of time? And I think also when people don't recognize that, oftentimes they end up making moves that take things backwards. And this is something I've been seeing over the past few years where it's like in your effort supposedly to address a problem, you go and you make it worse and you actually set us back a few decades, right?
What do you mean?
Okay. What I mean is, let's take an obvious example. If you look at this modern day, what people call anti-racism movement. It's going back to the notion that one of the most important thing about somebody is their race. It is their ethnicity, right? Like you're supposed to focus on that. They want me to focus on the fact that I'm black and you're white, right? Or like you're Jewish or this person's this or this person's that. And that's supposed to be the thing that I'm thinking about every day and I'm focusing on. And I'm supposed to now treat people differently based on their superficial skin color, where their ancestors came from. And the people who promote this will even say things such as being so-called colorblind reinforces systemic racism and so on. And they'll push this on children and they'll make children very, very conscious of their color so that they start seeing their classmates. Instead of seeing their classmates and their friends, they start seeing their white classmates and their classmates of color and their brown classmates and their and it's like, that's backwards. There are places in the USA, you've got universities there and schools where they have separate parent-teacher conferences for white students and white parents and students of so-called color and parents of color, or where they have segregated dormitories. Does that sound like progress? How is this a thing? So that's like a gigantic step backwards. All through my life, growing up 80s, 90s, 2000s, it was always, hey, treat everybody equally, right? Like, yeah, sure, we all look different. People have different backgrounds or whatever, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't tell you about their heart, their content of character, right? Like judge people as individuals. There's a pretty famous person, you know, Martin Luther King, who had a dream about his children not being judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. And now you've got people who are calling themselves anti-racists, and they're preaching the opposite. They're preaching that people should be judged not off the content of their character and not off their ideas and not off their behavior, but off of their skin color. And that is a giant step backwards.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, I mean, you mentioned Martin Luther King. He was all about equal opportunity, you know, equal opportunity for all. And I think that's been confused lately with equal outcomes. So, so and it turns out equal outcome actually is the opposite of equal opportunity. Because if no matter your opportunity, the outcomes are equal, then there's been an injustice in the system. Of course, everyone should have equal opportunity. Otherwise, there's an injustice in the system. But I think this focus that to be kind of politically correct on racial issues, you have to focus on equal outcomes and even equal outcomes over the past century. So taking into account history, I think that's really sort of destroyed the discussion on that. But it's hard. Yeah. It's hard for me to have that discussion because I, you know, then there's this whole category, I think, of liberalism that they think they're liberals, but they're all about equal outcome. Mm-hmm. And it's not a healthy discussion. I think you're able to say what you feel. Like I saw you recently on a news show where you're talking about BLM and everyone's like, yeah, right on. But not everyone can say that. You, in part, I think you can say these things because you're black and it's like you get a get out of jail free card when you talk about these issues. Well,
it's not a get out of jail free card. Trust me on that because,
I'm sure you've had your feedback, but I would have more feedback.
Yeah. You know, and that's a shame. I mean, again, that in itself shows that it's a, that shows it's a step backwards because that shouldn't be the case, but this is the environment and climate that's been created, especially over the past decade through all of that so-called activism. Okay, you want to talk about another thing going backwards? How about letting men into women's sports? How's that for a big step backwards?
You know, it's interesting. And I guess Dave Chappelle made the joke that, you know, and he wasn't singling out Caitlyn Jenner specifically, but he said Caitlyn Jenner was a woman for the entirety of 1 year and she became woman of the year. Beating out the other 3.5 billion women on the planet. And so you try to explain to, I'll explain to my daughters that that's not necessarily fair for them. They work hard their lives, you know, being the best they can be.
And they are female.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's odd. And, you know, I think a reason that this is all happening is, you know, I think it's a couple things. We've talked about many, but I think also a lot of the truth is a lot of the big battles have been won. You know, the big major battles in terms of equality under the law and generally treating people decently as individuals and not being horribly prejudiced or, you know, discriminatory, let alone violent towards people based off of their immutable characteristics. Thankfully those battles have largely been won, not everywhere in the world, but again, in our countries, those battles they've largely been won, right? If you were to go out and again, go out in any city, go to any city in the USA or in the UK, you'll typically just see people just getting on with life, getting on together. You'll see people, all sorts of people interacting of all ages, all colors, all whatever, right? People just interacting, living their lives, having their friends, their colleagues, and so on and so forth. Most people are not constantly obsessing over every little sort of minor superficial difference between us. So the necessity for that type of really strong sort of activism and movements and so on is largely diminished. And then I think that also leads into sort of boredom. I think a lot of people are kind of just bored and they don't really know where their energy should be going. Again, this comes back to my notion of like focusing inwards, right? And focusing on self-improvement and creating and doing all that, because the energy has to be dissipated somewhere. It has to be dissipated somewhere. And something I see with a lot of the people who get really obsessed with these ideas or who become activists in their push is they're not people who have built anything of interest or admirable, right? And so they're kind of projecting, they're sort of spewing it out on everybody else. And maybe in their head, they think that they're doing something good. But I think a lot of them actually know that they're not. But I think that by wearing that activist cap, you can basically get away with being a really nasty and vindictive person whilst pretending to be a good person, right? I'm sure you've encountered this where you get people who they think because they say the right politically correct phrases or they have the right hashtag in their social media bio or they put up the right flag or whatever, that they can just go and bully people or be nasty to people or be trolling and be writing nasty insults and messages to anyone who sort of crosses their way. And it's okay because they have the, you know, so-called correct political opinion. And that's, I don't know. It's, maybe, I think this has always existed to some degree, but I think it's, I think it's really been exaggerated recently. And yeah, we need less bored people.
Yeah. I think that's the title of a book, actually. That could be your next book. We need less bored people. But, you know, yeah. It's funny. Like, everybody was saying in 2016 how, or 2020, this is the most important election ever. So there's a site, newspapers.com, where you can search newspapers back to, like, the 1700s. And so I looked up each election, and I searched for the phrase, this is the most important election ever. And apparently every single presidential election since John Adams has been the most important election ever. You know, as Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Actually, I'm also interested in what's going on with your music career. Like, you know, you are focused on a lot of stuff and it probably prevents you from focusing as much as you would like on hip hop. But what's the latest with that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, my latest album, Word of Zuby, came out in August 2021. So I've still got several more music videos that I'm going to be putting out from that. I actually just recently got the vinyl copies of the album. So it's actually my very first album to ever come out on vinyl.
Wow.
It looks really dope. It's actually one disc is purple, one disc is gold. It's a double 12-inch vinyl record.
Why'd you do this? So DJs could use it?
Actually for a more like fan service.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I've actually had quite a lot of people ask me to put something out on vinyl. And I did a big Kickstarter project for the album earlier on last year, which was very successful. So I figured, let me use this opportunity to do a vinyl run as well. And I can also see what the level of demand is because people were able to pre-order the vinyl through the Kickstarter. So as an artist and as a creative, I like to try different things. I figured with my ninth music project, it would be a good idea to try putting it out in a different format. And so it was a little bit of an experiment. And I also wanted to have something that's a collector's edition. So there's only 300 made. So anyone who gets a copy of the vinyl, you can rest assured that you're going to be one of 300 people in the world who's ever going to have it. So yeah, I just wanted to try something a little bit different in that regard.
I think that's great. I think, you know, it's always, for me, with let's say writing, for instance, I always try to experiment with format. So if I have an idea and I want to write an article, I might not write it as like a usual article or post or whatever. I might write it as a Kickstarter campaign, for instance, and get my writing through that. Like, there's always different formats or ways to package things. And I think it's important to experiment to see what takes off. Twitter threads being a recent, not so recent example, like people have been doing Twitter threads forever, but now they're more common than ever. And that's an interesting way to kind of reel out a set of thoughts or an article, because it doesn't get bogged down in prose. Actually, the many evils of writing don't come out in Twitter threads. But I'm curious also, like, do you rap, do you produce the beats, or do you have a producer, or do you buy the beats, or what do you do there?
Yeah. I'm not a producer. I've never produced a beat in my life. But I work with a range of different producers all around the world. So on my latest album, I've got producers on there from the UK, from various countries in Europe. I've got American producers on there. I've got a Canadian producer on there as well. So I like to mix it up. I don't like all of my songs to sound the same. So I have certain producers who have made a lot of my songs, but it's a pretty big range. However, the lyricism side of things, the wordplay, I'm very much a words man. I could probably teach myself to produce, but I probably don't need a sixth or a seventh job. So I'm happy to just focus on the lyrics and the performance, and I let the production pros do that part.
I mean, I admire all kinds of music, but I'm a huge fan of hip hop and rap. Back in the 90s, my job was to essentially make the websites for many well-known famous rappers from that era. Mm. But I'm always struck, like, what do you think? And I know this has nothing to do with what we were talking about earlier, but now we're getting real interests. What do you think separates out a good rapper from a bad rapper? Because like let's take some great examples, some historical examples, like Kanye West and Jay-Z. They're an interesting example because they've worked together. Kanye West got his start producing the Blueprint, or he's got his well-known start. He was producing before him, but he produced the Blueprint for Jay-Z. So they've worked together. And Kanye has gone on to be perhaps the most successful rapper of all time. And many people said he couldn't both produce and rap. And yet, perhaps Jay-Z is still the better rapper, many people consider. Like, what makes someone good? And obviously, Kanye is great as well. But what makes someone good versus not as good?
Wow. Well, I guess every answer is going to just be my answer. I think there's both an objective and a subjective component, actually. I think that rapping does have technical aspects to it. So I think there's a part of it which is someone actually technically being a good rapper. And even with that, there's going to be some degree of subjectivity. But in terms of, you know, flow, ability to stick to a beat, some level of lyricism, I guess, could be split down. I feel like some of it is close to objective, and some of it is not, in the same way that a writer, you can, I don't know. It's a tricky one because people have such different criteria in terms of what they value and what they like in music. And the same with rappers. There are people who really don't care about lyricism. Right. There's a lot of people who don't care about lyricism at all. Right. It's all about like the vibe or the flow or the swag, or like, you know, they just like the voice or they just like the beat. Some people don't even really listen that much to the rapping and they just care more about the production. For me personally, in terms of what I think makes a good rapper is I'd say a combination of lyricism, delivery, narrative/story that they're able to weave, originality.
I feel like originality is also a function of production. Maybe not the originality of the lyrics. That doesn't have to do with the production. But, if you look at, like, again, like Kanye's albums, they're like this production tour de force, no matter what the rap, and the rapping's still great, but they're amazing.
Yeah,
like, from a production point of view.
So the qualities I'm saying, I mean, you could almost even take this off an a cappella rap. So when I say originality, I just mean it clearly being you and your own style. So as soon as if you can hear Kanye West rap for like 2 seconds and you know it's Kanye, right? You recognize his voice, you recognize his flow. He doesn't sound like someone else. Like if you sound, I think I notice with like all my favorite rappers, I can recognize them immediately, right? As soon as they're on a song, if you know it's a guest verse or something, it's like, boom, you know who that is. You know, oh, that's Jay-Z right there. Oh, that's Snoop Dogg, right? Like you hear their voice, you hear their style. Oh, it's DMX, right? Like it's very obvious.
But would you be able to recognize a Kanye song? Because sometimes he's not always the main rapper on his songs. And his production, it feels like he reinvents himself every album.
As a producer, not necessarily, but as a rapper, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, as a rapper, yes. And then, you know, a lot of it is subjective. You know, a lot of it is subjective. People just like different things. You know, there's artists that I might think are terrible, but millions of people love them. There's artists that I might think are great, but... you know, millions of people love them, but millions of people also dislike them. I know people who think that Eminem is a terrible rapper. I know people who think that Tupac's not a great rapper. I mean, I don't know how that's really debatable. But like, to me, Eminem is objectively an incredible rapper. Even if you don't like his music, I don't know how come someone could say that he's not a good rapper. But I don't know. I guess this is the whole objectivity, subjectivity thing.
So when you're sitting down to make a new album, do you focus on, okay, what do I want to say? Let's write the lyrics. Here's what I don't know.
I get the production first.
Oh, you get the production first. So you're looking for a beat first, and then you make
the... I start with the beat, yeah.
And then you look for a rap or lyrics around that.
Yeah, if I hear a beat that I like, then stuff will start coming to my brain immediately.
And forgive me for the naive questions, but like...
No, it's all good, man.
Yeah, I'm always just really curious about this artistic process, this in particular, because it's such an important art form of music over the past 40-30 years. But and again, this is the most naive question at all, but what's the role of rhyme in rap? And again, I've been listening to rap all my life, and sometimes it rhymes, sometimes it doesn't, but they always make it feel like it rhymes. And I know I'm going to listen to this later. I'm saying, am I the stupidest person on the planet? But I'm just really curious because sometimes I hear two lines that sound like they rhyme, but then when you think about it, they're not really rhyming. Mm-hmm. And so that must be in the delivery.
Yeah, that's the power of assonance and delivery. And even with things down to the artist's accent can change which words you're able to rhyme. So there are rappers. So a rapper from London will be able to rhyme things that don't rhyme in a Texas accent.
I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I've heard rappers from Houston rhyme boss with north.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Just because of the drawl that they have, and it just kind of works. So, but you know, I think with most lyrical forms of music in general, rhyme is supremely important because that's what... if you don't have the rhyme or at least a half rhyme, then it all sounds really jarring and weird. And I get, yeah, it falls more into almost like a spoken word type of thing or a speech. I think that your brain, like our brains are always recognizing patterns. It's an interesting question because I've never really thought about it like that. Like rhyming is just some sort of like, well, obviously it's rap, you rhyme, you know? But I think our brains sort of form these patterns and they have expectations. So if you're supposed to hear a rhyme or it sounds like a rhyme is coming and then it doesn't, it creates this like jarring effect that ruins the flow of music. Just like if you had a melody. I mean, you could hear a brand new melody that someone's playing on a piano or a guitar or something, and you notice when a note is wrong because your brain is anticipating. Your brain's anticipating the next thing. So when you hear that off note, it's like, ooh, like it pulls you out of the magic because it wasn't what you were expecting. So that's one thing that's so interesting to me with art and with music in particular, which is that it's so loose and you have so much space for creativity, but there are still rules to the game. It's a little bit like chess, right? Like there are, I haven't done the math on this, but there's like, you know, millions and millions and millions of different, you know, chess plays and boards that are probably billions. But chess still has rules. So you can play the game all of these different ways. The same with sports, right? You can play in all sorts of different ways, and there can all be these different flourishes and all these infinite possibilities, it seems, but there's actually still somewhat tight bounds of what you can and can't do, right? Like if you're playing football, or what Americans refer to as soccer, right? Like you can't pick the ball up, all right? You have to play with your feet.
Okay, so this is a great example, though. Those are like kind of technical rules. That's the rules of the sport, okay, or the game or the musical form. Like, yeah, if you're rapping, chances are you're going to use words. That's the form.
And yeah, you better.
but like, for instance, in chess, the way to win, and then there's like the next level of rules, which is that, oh, if you could take a queen with your pawn, you should do it. You could win material and that will win the game. Or if you could seize an open file or something like that. There's kind of then higher and higher meta rules of how to play, mm-hmm, a good game. And then the winner, though, is usually the one who breaks the rules, is the one who, oh, everybody expects me to do this, so that's why my opponent made this move, but now I'm going to surprise everyone and I'm going to make this move that actually wins, that nobody expected. Mm. And in music, something similar.
That's not breaking the rules. They're still playing within the rules.
Correct.
They can't take their pawn and just move it diagonally across the entire board, or right, like jump it four spaces forward.
But as you get meta, sometimes it's sort of like rules evolve into expectations. So like,
yes,
I should say standards. Like, oh, it's usually, you know, this major note is followed by a minor key, but, you know, I'm going to do something a little different and surprise people. And that's where the artistry is going to happen. And you know, with rap, I wonder if there's sometimes when people expect the rhyme, or they expect you to close on something, but that's where, mm-hmm, the wordplay comes in, and you're able to stretch out or leave a little mystery in what you're doing.
Mm. It can be done, but you know, there's always bounds. And I think that exists with every single art form. I think it's the same with painting. It's the same with drawing. It's the same with stand-up comedy, right? There's a certain pattern and a certain expectation and certain things that are built up. And if you deviate, while there's so much room for innovation, if you deviate too much and completely break the pattern or the expectation, it tends to fall flat, because that just doesn't resonate with people, right? You can't just jump on a piano and start hitting random keys and claiming you're creating a new, you know, it sounds terrible.
Right, right.
And, you know, it's like there has to, so yeah, you could, I'm sure there's some pianist there who can find some way to innovate on the piano and do something a little bit different. Ooh, that was slightly unexpected, but it's still within that. I think a lot of interesting art happens on that boundary between, the boundary between order and chaos, right? Yeah. If it's too orderly, it can be boring and generic, uninteresting. If it's too chaotic, it's just messy, right? If it's just, oh, I'm making a painting and I'm just throwing paint everywhere, it's like, well, that's not really art. If you're just headbutting your keyboard, you know, it's like, that's not really, you're just strumming the guitar randomly and aggressively and it sounds horrible. It's like, no, that's too much chaos. But I think a lot of the interesting stuff is when people are able to sort of dance in that line. I think that's where the best comedy happens. I think that's where the best music happens. I think that's where the best paintings happen, and so on and so forth. So and sometimes you don't really know where that line is until you violate it. I think that's something that stand-up comedians are constantly testing, right? They're constantly testing, like, where is that line between being funny and maybe a little bit subversive or offensive, but not outright, you know, going so hard that you're not even being funny anymore, and you're just being nasty, right? And it comes across as with ill intent, or that you're actually trying to hurt people or something like that. So whereas, again, you know, if you go too far in the orderly direction and everything is so politically correct and so whatever, that it's like this isn't even funny. This is just, you know, it doesn't feel like comedy anymore. It's like someone just giving you a lecture. So there's always a balance.
And like, where do you see that line in your rap?
Hmm. again, it's not something I actively think about. So it's a tricky question to answer. I just create. Like, I don't I don't think about it that technically. I just kind of create.
Maybe it's harder to answer now because I feel like in the beginning of the form, there were so many different ways to experiment.
That's true.
Like, I remember talking to Coolio once where he described the difference between him and, let's say, rappers before him is that his rap was a little bit more melodic. Like, he was a little bit more into singing his rap and having like a tune to it as opposed to kind of straight, you know, rapping to a beat. I guess he was comparing himself, let's say, to Public Enemy or NWA. Yeah. And then you have the Wu-Tang Clan, which I think stretched it further with sort of not as much rhyming and a little bit more raw somehow. But I don't know lately. I don't know what's been going on lately.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I think hip hop is certainly in general, in terms of the mainstream stuff, it's moved in a more melodic direction in general. There's a lot of very popular sort of half rappers, half singers these days. There's a lot of kind of melodic stuff. A lot of it is very heavily auto-tuned. It's not really my favorite. I tend to prefer the kind of 90s and 2000s style of more kind of what people would now call rappity rap. You know, like kind of more focused on lyricism and wordplay, less vocal processing and auto-tune and melody and stuff like that. But as I said, man, different people like different things. And that's always been the nature of art. And it will be. And it's cool because it's good to have a big range of things out there. I mean, if we all liked or believed or, you know, if we all liked the same things or believed the same things or all that, like, the world would be pretty boring. I think oftentimes, you know, it's weird because everyone wants people to like believe what they believe and like what they like and, you know, support what they support and so on and so forth. And I get that. But also, it would be pretty dull. I mean, if everyone liked the exact same music and, you know, maybe you just need like 20 musicians and everyone just likes these 20 musicians and all the other ones that could exist, nobody likes that. It would be pretty dull. If we all agreed on everything, conversations would be pretty boring. If we all looked the same and spoke the exact same language and whatever, like, humanity would be quite dull. It would just be like robots. So
I'm telling you, your next book's got to be The Fight Against Boredom, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
where can people find your music right now? Where can they listen to it? What's the best place?
Sure. So the easiest is probably whatever platform you usually listen to music on, whether it's Spotify or iTunes or Apple Music or Bandcamp, so on and so forth. I'm on all of them. Just search my name, Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, and you will find me on there. You can also find me on all social media at Zuby Music, Z-U-B-Y Music, same handle on everything, and people can find me there as well.
Also, your book, Strong Advice, which is your book about fitness, can people get that on Amazon?
It's not on Amazon, so don't go to Amazon looking for it, but if you go to teamzuby.com, teamzuby.com, then you can get it there. You can also get my music and merchandise there as well.
Yeah, I like your shirts, and you have the fully jacksonated sweatshirt. I need to wear that.
Yeah, get one, man.
But Zuby, thanks so much for once again coming on the podcast. Always learn stuff from you, and your every content you put out is always thoughtful and insightful, and I really appreciate everything you do. And thanks once again.
Nice one, James. I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thanks.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.